ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I trust that you're all feeling happy. Everyone should be happy. It is the natural condition of the living being to be happy. Happiness is in Krishna consciousness. Krishna himself is Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, fully situated in spiritual existence. And his whole being is happiness. Even Krishna's unhappiness is happiness. As Srila Prabhupada points out, Ramlila, the pastimes of Lord Rama, they appear to be full of unhappiness. But that apparent unhappiness is all happiness. So everyone is meant to be happy. And Krishna comes to this world to make everyone happy, those who have forgotten their relationship with him. And the great devotees come to this world to make everyone happy. In this material world, everyone has the diseased mentality of trying to be happy without Krishna, which is not possible. So Krishna consciousness means happiness. Not the happiness of that which Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, sangsparshaja bhog, the enjoyment of interacting the senses with the sense objects. Yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yone evate adyantavanta kauntayana teshu ramate buddhaha. Krishna says that the enjoyment that arises from interacting the senses with the sense objects actually cause distress. In the beginning, or when one is contemplating that, when one is performing the act, and the repercussions also are simply causes of distress. So an intelligent person does not take part in this. So Krishna comes to shower bliss upon us all. I just read in a book that was published by Achyutananda Das, who was very famous in the early days of ISKCON. Now he's past 70 years of age in this body, and he just brought out a book which, giving some glimpses into those early days of his in the Krishna conscious movement. So he recalled one time when a Christian priest asked one of his godbrothers, "Are you really happy doing that?" And the devotee Dinanath replied, "I am constantly diving and surfacing in the ocean of transcendental bliss." To which the Christian pastor had no reply. He didn't know. He was astonished, simply astonished. So we trust that you're all feeling happy. This is your summer holiday. The summer holiday people go to have more sense gratification. Whoops, I've been associated with money now too much. Now you have 2 weeks, no work, and you can enjoy yourself. All the money you saved up. Oh, you didn't even save it up. You just took a loan from the bank. You can enjoy yourself. And you come here for more austerity. As if your life was not enough devoid of sense gratification, here you have to rise early. Generally, in Lika, in the summer, it's raining and cold. In the winter, it's snowing and more cold. So it's known as a place of austerity. More facilities have been provided than previously. But still, it is a place of austerity. But you're all very happily coming here, year after year. Because there is a taste, bhakti rasa, that comes from devotees coming together and sharing Krishna consciousness with each other. The more the better. That's the Kami's formula and the devotee's formula also. Their understanding is the more we get for our sense gratification, the more we enjoy it, the better it is for us. And the devotee's formula is the more association of devotees, the more intense and blissful Krishna consciousness. The experience of Krishna consciousness is more intense and more blissful. Something also that those of us who are able to engage in Krishna consciousness without having to go to work, have jobs, and interact with materialistic people, those of us who are fortunate to live in ashrams, or in my case, one ashram after another, those of us who are not married but full-time devotees, that's a politically incorrect term nowadays, but anyway, you know what it means. We can perceive that we don't get as much bliss from these festivals as do the householder devotees. Because for us to rise early every morning and have Mangalati in the association of devotees, have a full morning program and then all day activities in Krishna consciousness, and then again in the evening some hearing and chanting program, for that, that's every day. But for the householder devotees who are faithfully carrying on their Krishna conscious activities in adverse circumstances, it's great bliss to be away from all that chatter. All that, just like on the in the days of FM radio, I mean, it still is FM radio, and you're trying to tune in to a station, but you're trying to get exactly so the sound comes through clearly. But there's so much, what's that called, chatter or something? There's other stations which are coming. You're trying to listen, and there are other sounds coming in which you don't want to hear. You're subject to that. But here there's no disturbance. Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So we see the materialists, they're driving up and down in their cars or their motorhomes or their motorbikes, going up and down. And so it seemed to be more this year than other years. Maybe I'm coming at a different time of year. And inevitably, when they see us, they turn around in astonishment. And we lament at their plight, these poor people. They think they're having a good holiday in their fancy car. They're poor people. They're just working in some job that they don't like to do. And thus the saying, what is that? Thank God for, what is it? Thank God for Saturday or something. Thank God it's Friday. TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. TGIF. It's well known in America. Thank God it's Friday. It means people are not happy in what they do. Most of their life they spend doing things that they don't like to do. And then they make life miserable for others also. Misery loves company is an English saying. I'm sure you have a similar thing in your language, whatever your language may be. So they're living a very unfortunate life. Their happiness for 2 weeks or 3 weeks in a year is to drive around in some other country. Instead of driving around in their own country, they drive around in another country and they go camping and fishing and shooting and cycling and hiking. And then they get back in the 300-kilometer traffic jam and go back to wherever they came from, Germany or Sweden or whatever. Miserable life. And for devotees, their holiday is that they're chanting Hare Krishna, they're attempting to become Krishna conscious. And they come once a year to a festival like this, or maybe more than once a year. But I think for most of you attending, this may be the major festival that you attend in each year. Srila Prabhupada, he understood that it is very difficult to be Krishna conscious in an unfavorable situation. And of course, that is the statement of Shastra. And it just makes sense that if we're living among people who are not Krishna conscious, then it becomes much more difficult to be Krishna conscious. Therefore, again, I congratulate all of you who are maintaining your Krishna consciousness year after year after year in a situation which is not at all favorable to Krishna consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada had a program whereby you can daily, householders also, can daily have a full morning program in association of devotees, live in association of devotees, and in that way be happy in Krishna consciousness. And you, whatever work you're doing, you can do in the association of devotees. That was especially Srila Prabhupada's idea for farm projects and varnashram. Anyone who reads Srila Prabhupada's books and his related instructions that appear in his recorded conversations and lectures and in his letters, his essays, they can understand that a major part of Srila Prabhupada's mission was establishing Varnashram, which was very much connected with establishing communities where devotees can live together simply on the land and produce their own food. Now, this, although it was a major part of Srila Prabhupada's mission, it wasn't fully established in Srila Prabhupada's personal presence. It was always part of Srila Prabhupada's manifesto. Even before he came to the West, he wrote about Gita Nagari community where devotees can live together like this. And after he established the movement in the West, he established temples in many cities. And then he started to emphasize more and more that we have to have farms, and with profits that were being generated from the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Prabhupada encouraged the devotees to establish farm communities. So many properties were purchased during Srila Prabhupada's manifest presence, especially properties like this for farm communities, especially in America, New Vrindavan, Gita Nagari, Murari, Sevak, New Talavan. Those were purchased in America. These were purchased, these properties. Maybe one other which I can't remember. In France, New Mayapur. And then shortly after Prabhupada left, that new Govardhan in Australia and several other properties were purchased. Srila Prabhupada, shortly before he passed away, said that 50% of my work is not yet done to establish Varnashram, which, if you think about it, is it's a massive statement. Because you think what Srila Prabhupada did, and he said that 50% of my work is not done, that means it's a major part of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And it is the logical outcome of everything that Srila Prabhupada preached and did. Because he preached how the modern society is demoniac. And of course, it's not just Srila Prabhupada's opinion. That's what Srila Prabhupada says is fully based on Shastra, and it fully tallies with reality. In demoniac people, their whole goal of life is sense gratification and exploitation, and when everyone's trying to do that, or when that's the dominant mode of life, then it creates a very nasty civilization, which we're seeing more and more day by day. Tatas chanu dinam dharma satyam shocham shamadaya kalena balina rajan nang shantyayur balang smritihi. Shukadev Goswami said to Parikshit Maharaj, describing Kali Yuga, thereafter, which means with the onset of Kali Yuga, with every single day, all good things will decline. And he gave the examples of dharma, which may be loosely translated as religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, compassion, satyam, shocham, what is that? Kshama, tolerance. Then, kalena balina rajan nangsha, lifespan, bodily strength, mental abilities. They just decrease day after day after day. So the whole world has become horrible. And those who are, let's say, 40 years old, they can look back and see, even in their childhood, they can remember their parents were saying, oh, how bad the world has become in the last generation. And they themselves are thinking how much worse it has become. The good old days. But the good old days for their parents were the bad new days. It's getting worse. We can't imagine how bad things are getting. And actually the situation in the world in the last few years, practically since the beginning of this century, well, as one journalist wrote, the 21st century began on the 11th of September 2001. And with that event of three buildings being hit by airplanes and falling down, although one just fell down in sympathy to the other two. They couldn't find an airplane to drive into it, so well, don't need an airplane. So with that, and the whole situation is becoming more and more intensely bad day after day. So Srila Prabhupada, he saw the whole situation. He wasn't at all impressed by the modern civilization. He called it cat and dog life. And he proposed this alternative that you don't have to live among these people. Come and live among devotees. So Srila Prabhupada didn't personally establish that. And after the departure of Srila Prabhupada, the movement went through many difficulties, and still is, and always will, because as long as there is a Krishna consciousness movement in the material world, we can expect many difficulties, because preaching Krishna consciousness in the material world is not at all easy. It's Maya goes into overtime mode, or what's the high gear. I just can't think of the word. That's described that Maya has two phases. One is avaranatmika vritti. That's just normal Maya. She just covers everyone. Yaya samohito jiva. She by whom all the jivas are bewildered. Atmanam trigunatmikam. People identify their existence with this situation within the material world, or composed of three modes of material nature. And then if someone starts to think, hey, I don't understand this Maya, I want to get out, and they start getting serious about release from Maya, then she calls in her prakshepatmika vritti, the throwing potency, by special potency to throw people back. You're coming out, of the covering, get back. Throwing you back, or kicking you back. So, Maya doesn't take any holidays. She's always there, day and night. And she does her service to Krishna very thoroughly. Any little break, any little infringement or slackness on the path of the yogi, and she'll come in and spoil everything. Just like this, we find in the Bhagavatam, there's this story of Indra, who was serving Diti, knowing that Diti had performed a vow by which she would get a son who would kill him. So Indra thought what to do. He became the servant of Diti and served her meticulously, day and night. And then when Diti made some infringement in the proper following of her vow, she lay down to sleep, without properly washing herself. Some infringement of the vow, and immediately when she was asleep, Indra entered her body and cut her embryo into 7 pieces. And then again another 7 pieces. So any little chidra, any little hole, any little... I just can't think of the word in English. Can you think of it? Maya will enter. She's like that. Of course, Krishna is very merciful on his devotees. They don't fall in the same way that yogis might fall. Vishwamitra, how many thousands of years he performed austerities. And ding, 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 the tinkling of the ankle bells of Menaka, and he fell down. So it is a razor's edge. Kshurasya dhara nishitan duratyaya. Durgang patas tat kavayo vadanti. The path of spiritual life is like a razor's edge. It's very sharp. You have to be very careful. I can't understand all this preaching about relax, take it easy. It's not what we hear from Shastra. We hear from Shastra, be careful. You can fall down very easily. And Maya is so tricky that we don't even know that we're fallen. We say, I'm doing fine. How are you doing? I'm fine. But we're in trouble. So, what was I talking? I got off the track there a little bit. What was the main thread? I wandered off track. Just that's how Maya works. You don't even realize. You lost your focus. Yeah. Before that, I've gone off quite a long way. I was talking about Varnashram. I'm supposed to be talking about Varnashram, but I wandered. I'm supposed to be Krishna conscious, but what am I doing sitting here drinking beer every day and patting my dog? What happened? What went wrong? What happened? It was a little puppy. I was chanting my rounds. Little puppy came around, and I thought, what a nice little puppy. And I took it. I can't remember. What happened? I can't remember. I was talking about, anyway, I guess I can start somewhere else. Anyway, Varnashram communities. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram communities so devotees can come together. Sanghe Shakti Kalo Yuge. In Kali Yuga, strength comes from association. In Satya Yoga, people would meditate. A meditation is not a group process. It's you're alone with your mind. What a dangerous process. Whew. Imagine just sitting there with your mind and that's all. Whew. What a knife. Sounds like a very bad idea. Well, of course, the yogi is supposed to meditate upon Krishna, but then if the mind wanders, just if the mind wanders, then you're left either. You have to face all the garbage that's been accumulated since time immemorial. So in Kali Yoga, the process is we get strength from association with devotees. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish these farm communities. And, I said Maya is very dangerous. And then, yeah. So Maya is always trying to catch us. But if we're in association with devotees, we can be very strong. Festival. It's a daily festival. Krishna consciousness is meant to be a daily festival. As I mentioned at the opening of this, camp, that my first experience of Krishna consciousness is that it's a daily festival. I was astonished to see that even in the very cold weather, with no heating inside, because devotees at that time, it wasn't that they were just trying to be austere, but they just couldn't afford any heating. They would rise early in the morning, take a cold bath, and then they'd be dancing for God. I realized it's not artificial. This is something real. They're getting real pleasure from there. They're really situated on the transcendental platform. So Krishna consciousness is a daily festival. That's stated in the Bhagavatam. Nitya Mahotsav, daily festival, which everyone can take part in. So this was Srila Prabhupada's program. What do you do if you want to be Krishna conscious, but you have family or you're inclined to have a family? Well, Srila Prabhupada didn't say that every householder has to go to a farm community, but it was his general prescription. He offered other alternatives also, that for most devotees, they can come and live and produce our own food. That it doesn't necessarily mean that everyone's a farmer. The duty of the farmers, the Vaishyas, is krishi goraksha, and also vanija. Vanija means business and banking. But krishi goraksha, krishi especially means farming by plowing. So that's particularly for mass production of crops, particularly grains, and protecting cows. But in Vedic culture, and actually in cultures all over the world, even here in Croatia, for a short time still, until they get fully integrated into the European Union, most people will grow their own vegetables. It's not that you have to be a farmer to grow your own vegetables, but you have a little land, and whatever else you're doing, you produce vegetables in your little plot of land. It's just a normal thing which people do. So, it's not that everyone's a farmer, but everyone can produce vegetables, flowers, fruits, all these things, with a little land, without much extra effort. It depends on where you live. In some climates are more difficult than others. Some soils are more difficult than others. But if you have a fairly good climate and fairly good soil, then you can produce all kind. By the mercy of the earth, our mother, she will produce without having to torture her by putting all kinds of nasty chemicals. All kinds of profuse crops can be produced. Families' requirements for vegetables and for all these things. So, in a farm community, it's not that everyone's a farmer. There are many, many things to be done. After Srila Prabhupada departed from this world, various problems beset our movement, and one of the results, of course, it's quite a complex history, and I haven't even studied it in detail, but for whatever reason, the whole idea of having farm communities for grihasthas has largely been lost within our movement. That doesn't mean that there's no need for it. That many devotees nowadays most of the devotees are grihasthas. When Srila Prabhupada is personally present, most were not married. But most of those who are not married became married. And they still have the same problems. That we don't have farm communities doesn't mean that householders don't have problems. Inevitably, we might say, many grihastha devotees haven't lived up to the high standards which are high standards that Srila Prabhupada wanted. High is, of course, a relative term in comparison to that of the way most people live or even of the standards of most religious groups, but Srila Prabhupada just saw it as basic human standards, not anything particularly high. The human society has descended below the human level. So people think that it's very high standard to follow four regulated principles, although it's just from the standpoint of pretty much anyone in Hindu society up until about one or two generations ago, it was just, well, not all Hindus were or are vegetarians, but for many it was just to not take intoxication. Of course, the British introduced tea, which is not a major intoxication, but for many, many people to not take intoxication except tea, and before the introduction of tea, no tea also. No illicit sex, no gambling. They never even thought about these things. No illicit sex, no gambling, no meat eating, no intoxication. Srila Prabhupada recounted a story, or I think someone told Srila Prabhupada, it's in one conversation, that there was someone who moved to Bhavnagar, which is a town in Saurashtra in Gujarat. He moved there from Sindh. Now, in much of Gujarat, even the Muslims didn't eat meat. But in Sindh, another province, which is now in Pakistan, meat eating was quite common, even among the Hindus. You from a Sindhi background? So, this man moved from Sindh, and where's the meat, he was thinking. And one time he was walking at midday, he passed some house and he smelt meat. And he went inside and saw there's meat being cooked. He said, ah, meat. And people said to him, how do you know it's meat? Because they didn't expect people to even know what meat looked like. So he said, well, you know, actually I'm from Sindh. And so they had a little private club of secret meat eating. It wasn't illegal, but it was socially so unacceptable. Even the Muslims wouldn't take it. I mean, there are various reasons for that, because many of the Gujarati Muslims were... Anyway, I won't go into the reasons. But one reason is that because none of the Hindus would have anything to do with it. They wouldn't do any business with them. They wouldn't sell them anything. They wouldn't buy anything from them. And so they had to be. So to follow the four regulated principles was just... For many people, it was as normal as it is for people nowadays to break them. And they don't even break it. They just even know that previously, that we're having initiation. All right, so Lokanath Goswami, he gave initiation to Narottam Das Thakur. Did he ask him, what are the four regulated principles? No. We don't know for sure, but it's unlikely, because just like, how do you know it's meat? If Lokanath Goswami was to say to Narottam Das Thakur, no gambling, and Narottam would say, what's that? Actually, Narottam came from a Kayasta family, so in that family, but Lokanath Goswami is from a Brahmin family, so there's no question. No question of any such thing. So this is the normal human level to follow these principles, but it becomes very difficult to do so when we're associated with people who they have no idea of these things. And they because they just take it to be normal that people live at a subhuman level, they think that people who don't follow these things, that they're not proper humans. Because they think that human life means to eat meat, gamble, illicit sex. Now in America and England, gay marriage is legalized. Homosexual marriage means they've the whole conception of marriage has changed. It's not a sacred union. It's a legal union. That's all. They've redefined marriage and everything else. So, for devotees to live together as devotees is most conducive for devotional service, happy life. Now, most devotees nowadays not doing that. They don't think about it. They don't know about Srila Prabhupada's instructions about that. But the need for it is as strong as ever. Because without that, then we tend to come down, to fall down, and accept the lower or level which is below that which Srila Prabhupada desired and instituted for his disciples. And we take what is lower than the level that Srila Prabhupada instituted, we take that to be normal, because all the devotees are doing it, so what's the harm? And it may seem very practical also. Well, let's not talk about all these rules and following, because anyway, let's be honest, no one's following. That's what we often hear. But here, at least at this camp, we have evidence that devotees can live as grihasthas in Krishna consciousness within karmi society and maintain principles and maintain their ideal and maintain their purity. It's a great struggle, no doubt, but it can be done, because I believe that many of you are doing so, which is why you like to come to this festival, where we stress on all these things. But it would be much easier and more conducive for our Krishna consciousness if we could all come together to do so. Yeah, so many devotees say, oh, let's talk about it. Talking. Well, talking is the beginning. Srila Prabhupada began this whole movement by talking and convincing others that it is possible to live in Krishna consciousness. And then gradually as devotees took it up, he showed them how they can do all these things. So I want to tell you a little bit about some projects which are coming up in India, Varnashram projects. There are four in particular that are new projects. New means they've been going on, all of them, for maybe one of them has been going on about 5 or 6 years. That was started by Bhakti Raghav Swami. And another three, they've all been going on for about 2 years, 2 or 3 years only. These are projects which are organized by, mostly by disciples of myself. They came about because I talk about Srila Prabhupada's Varnashram mission and how the modern society is a slaughterhouse for the soul. And devotees, they wanted to start these projects because they see our children. What will happen to our children? They're going to grow up in this society and we won't be able to protect them from the influence or the bad influence of the society all around them. Our children will think that their parents are very strange because they're not normal. It's a fact that devotees in Krishna consciousness, they're not normal by the standard of this everyone else in the society that we live. And children growing up in that, they'll think, why should we have to follow all these rules? And why don't we just be like everyone else? Among people in general and among children especially, there's a very strong psychological need to be accepted within a group and not have people call you foolish and to conform to and be accepted by others. So seeing this, and of course I encourage devotees to read Srila Prabhupada's books, to listen to his lectures, which, if they do so, they'll find that Srila Prabhupada, his one aspect of his presentation of Krishna consciousness, which is always present, one major feature of his preaching, is distinguishing reality from illusion for the welfare of all. And he points out again and again and again that Krishna consciousness is our need and everything else is just nonsense, rascaldom. And the modern society is just killing the soul, just foolish rascals misleading people in the name of education and progress. And I also often speak on these themes because that's what I understood, that we're supposed to repeat what we heard from our guru. So devotees hearing this, thinking this, seeing this, and having children, householders having children, they think, wow, I don't want my children to grow up like this. This is in India, because it's not that in India we used to think. Nowadays, there's lots of up and down. There's international travel has become quite common, but in the 1960s and 1970s, it wasn't. So we used to say, you go to India and everyone's very spiritual and everyone's self-realized. And so that illusion was there. But modern India is very materialistic. Of course, it still has that centuries-old culture, spiritual culture, but along with that or superimposed on that. It's a very materialistic culture. And increasingly affected by the degradation of the Western world. So devotees are seeing this and thinking that, we don't subject our children to this. What do we do? And some of them took the initiative to just, okay, let's, this is what Prabhupada says, okay, let's get some land and live on the land, and we can, who's going to do it? The official ISKCON society is not going to do it. Okay, we'll do it. Let's do our best and see what we can do. So they're doing that. And in one case, there are three projects in different parts of India which are disciples of mine are much involved in. Two of them were started like that by householders, and another one was started by force behind that. Of course, any community means a community. It's not a one-man show, but the main visionary there was one brahmachari devotee who, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, he understood the need that we're preaching and preaching, but we're making devotees, people are coming to Krishna consciousness, but we've not instituted this vanashram, which Srila Prabhupada was so desirous to do, and householders need it, otherwise they come to Krishna consciousness, but due to bad association or pressure of work or whatever, they're not able to come to as high a level as they'd like to, and their children are being spoiled by the education system. And there are so many problems. So he started that. And of course, not a one-man show, because if you're going to have a farm project, then you have to get householders involved. So these various projects are going on. And before they were started, many devotees, they say, no, you can't do that. You can't live like that. You can't live simply on the land. That's not for you. No one in the modern age can live like that. They say you're just wasting your time and money and everything, and you want to train your kids the way Srila Prabhupada said, just in Krishna consciousness. That's very bad for the children, and this is all fanatic. It's a lot of negative preaching. I'm not talking so much about from the Kami society, but from within our own devotees community. Why do you want to do this? You have a good job in the city. Why don't you just do that, and you can preach and make more devotees? And so many objections. But those who were determined to do it, they went ahead and did it with the idea to live as simply as possible. That was a major part of Srila Prabhupada's preaching, because if you want to live with all modern conveniences, you have to pay for it. And the land, the Mother Earth gives what we need, but if we want more than we need, then we have to get into commercial farming, which means large pieces of land, more than we can farm without machinery, and then we need electricity and machines and chemicals and in loans and investments, and then the whole idea of living simply and concentrating on Krishna consciousness is lost. So living simply, without electricity, which people, they just can't imagine what it's like, what is just primitive, unnatural, unnecessary. But there are advantages to that also. No night shifts. Early to bed, early to rise becomes a normal thing, because of course, in tropical climates, the Throughout the year, the sunrise and the sunset is pretty much at the same time. So it'll be minimum, say, 10.5 hours night, and maximum maybe 13.5 or 14. It depends how far away from the equator you go. So it's pretty much this. So naturally you tend to take rest sometime after the sunset, and then you rise before sunrise. It becomes a very natural thing. You don't need alarm clocks and all this kind of thing. Just natural bodily rhythm you get into. So one of these communities was established, just starting. Just devotees said, okay, we're quitting our jobs in the city, well-paying jobs, and going to the land, and we'll grow food and we'll educate our children from, what's the curriculum? Prabhupada's books. So very idealistic, you may say. If you no, it's just all nonsense. What are you doing? So one of these ashrams I went to just 2 weeks after they'd first moved there. I just visited. Then I came back after a few months, and I saw the devotees, their faces had completely changed. They, the bodily color had become much darker from being in the sun, because after all, there's a lot of sunshine in India. But their bodily countenance was just glowing. They'd become physically dark, but spiritually bright. And they, one couple said to me, who were particularly instrumental in studying, they said, oh, thank you so much for sending us. I didn't really send you, I didn't order you, but it was, said, we're so happy. And they didn't have to tell me they were happy, it was just quite obvious. And they were serious, I mean, obviously they were serious devotees to make that step. They're young, in their 30s. One couple I'm talking about, they have two kids, small kids. I mean, there were serious devotees in the city, but how much happy they feel that this, just every morning we rise early, we have Mangal Aarti, and just all day in Krishna's service, living with devotees, we're very, very happy. And they said that now if we ever have to go to the city, we feel it's horrible. How could we live in the city all those years? Why didn't we come earlier? So they're experiencing the happiness that they used to get coming to a festival. But they're having the festival daily. And they have a mission to raise the children, not only their own children, but others' children. Another thing that was said, that because we want to start Gurukul for the children, and everyone said no one will send their kids because the curriculum is Prabhupada's books, and we're not giving any certificates. We're not going to have the government curriculum. And said no one will send their kids, but it's not true at all. Many people, many devotees, they want to send their children, even if they're not able to come themselves. So it's still early days, but there are good signs that it can be done. Now, you may say, all right, that's nice. Oh, actually, there are many things to say. In another community, I was there recently, and we're having a meeting of all the devotees there, and one devotee, he said, well, you know, in the city, when I was living there, then he was saying there are certain things that we could regularly visit our parents and preach to them. And he was talking about some of the advantages of city life and some of the disadvantages of of living in the farm in the winter when it's cold and you have to get up in the dark and heat up water with wood fire. Actually, there's a system that you make it hot at night and you keep it hot overnight. Anyway, so he wasn't really complaining, but he was saying that it might be difficult to sustain this over the years. So I replied to him that, yeah, it's a fact. Definitely there are certain difficulties in moving here, and especially those who are pioneers, they may have to go through many difficulties. And already in 1 or 2 years, the devotees had, by experience, discovered many things that they can improve, which they didn't know in the beginning. So gradually things are getting better because they're just learning how to live in that way. But I said to him that, well, despite all these difficulties that you have to undergo, you now every morning have a full morning program with all the devotees, which you didn't have in the city. You weren't rising early every morning and having Mangalati. And even if you did sometimes, then you wouldn't have it with so many devotees. And you're living with devotees. You can wear Vaishnav dress and tilak all the time. It's much more conducive for your Krishna consciousness. He said, yeah, that's of course true. That's very true. That is the advantage. So there may be many difficulties. Snakes, at least in India, in the country, snakes are a hazard, but not trucks going past all the time. And not human beings like snakes who threaten to destroy your Krishna consciousness. So there's things you can do for snakes also. And there are preventive measures so that you don't... Anyway, I don't need to speak about that now. There will be certain difficulties, but... Undoubtedly there will be difficulties, but the great advantage is that you live with devotees and you have Krishna consciousness. So that's required everywhere. You may think, well, in India it's much more feasible to do so, to make such a communities. But I would think actually in the West in some ways it's more feasible to do so, because there's not much idea about that in India. I always used to hear that Prabhupada had said, it's one of those common Prabhupada saids, we're not sure if he said it, but it sounds like he said it, that Srila Prabhupada had said that Indian people are very close to Krishna and people from the West are very far away from Krishna, but the people in India are going in the other direction away from Krishna, and the people in the West are going toward Krishna. So something like that. It's one of those sayings. So, as I said, modern India is very materialistic. People are very concerned with making money and their children. We go in the country areas, and mostly the rural culture is dying, because all the people send their children to school and they get them qualified as doctors and engineers and this and that, and then there are no old people, there are no young people to carry on the farming. One place I went to, this was about 15 years ago, some remote area of Uttar Pradesh. We had a public program. This is in Uttar Pradesh, one state of India. And I saw all the people present. I said, where are all the young people? And the answer was in Surat, which is in another state, in Gujarat. They're all the young people, they don't stay at home, they go and work in a big city. Which is incidentally one of the objections I have to all this educating children in Vrindavan. I think it's a great service to the Vrajavasis to educate their children. Yeah, they educate them, then they'll all go off to Delhi and leave Vrindavan. And they'll get jobs in Delhi. And so... The rural culture is, and this education, that's another whole topic, but this In India now, they're pushing. They have to send their children to school. In Bangladesh also, you see on the back of the rickshaws. Ah, what is that? Apna shantanera, shantanera, shkule patao. Send your children to school. There's the idea. And you get these big philanthropists, they come and say, well, we're helping to feed the children so that they can go to school and it's developing the nation. They're rascals. So-called philanthropists. They have big factories and they need workers for their factories and qualified people. So they make a law and they make arrangements so all the children can go to school so that they can have staff to employ in their factory. And then the countryside empties it out. And then they buy up all these small farms and they make it into huge farms. And in this way, their business increases. And we're doing... Yeah, we're philanthropists. We're helping to develop the nation. They're all cheaters. And people believe it. Yes. You see, my child's not a farmer anymore. He's working in the city as a salesman or working in a call center and very advanced, more than us. So Srila Prabhupada was a revolutionary. He saw through all the cheating of modern society and recommended, get back to the simple life that Krishna gave us. This is Krishna's arrangement. Live simply on the land, grow your own food, chant Hare Krishna. And we see even in this village area, people, the old people here, even though they've been through the war and everything, basically their outlook on life is very simple. They're much more intelligent, actually, than people in the city. I'm talking about karmis here. I'm not talking about devotees even. But they have much more understanding about the nature of life. Because people in the city, they're on the TV, internet, and sports, and just education, and their mind is full of all kinds of things that have got no relationship even to material so-called reality, what to speak of actual reality of Krishna consciousness. So it is possible to do it, and probably more so in the West, where at least... in the West, many people, they're not enamored by modern society. And in many ways, they're not as materialistic as in India. They're not that much concerned about having a big job and lots of money. Many people still are not that much concerned about it. Then, lots of money and all these facilities and, a lot of people are concerned with ecological issues, which in India they don't care about at all, mostly. It was there in the pristine culture, but it's all been lost. Otherwise, people would never, just like we find Srila Prabhupada, he wouldn't cut trees. He was very much against cutting trees unnecessarily. In modern India, they don't care at all. This recent massive flood, which killed thousands of people in Kedarnath, one major cause for that was the damming of every rivulet and river in the Himalaya region, and just damming, making more and more dams for mostly for hydroelectric power for the people of Delhi and northwest UP, Uttar Pradesh, so that. Change the whole topology of the area. So maybe it's in many ways it's more easy to do so. Anyway, I mean there are pros and cons, but my point is that it's not just that because people are in India they can do it. Maybe in one way because we do have more devotees there because people by their culture they take to devotees. And of course the population of India is much greater than that of, for instance, Croatia. So we can expect there should be more people taking to Krishna consciousness. But the idea of living simply, producing your own food, it's in the atmosphere. In the West, there are people talking about it and doing it more so than in India. There is a relatively small number of people in India who are interested in doing that. The number of people in the West who are talking about it and doing it is much more than in India. So green solutions, what they call green, the green movement. They talk about alternative sources of power. They have the idea that we'll go on with the modern civilization, but with different sources of power. But Srila Prabhupada's vision was quite different. You don't need all this modern civilizations. Srila Prabhupada, approximately 1973, there was the first petrol crisis, in which they said the shortage of oil. It was engineered by the oil-producing countries. They suddenly woke up and thought, hey, we're selling oil so cheaply, why don't we sell it for more? We're only getting so many billions of dollars a day, we could be getting more. So they stopped giving and said, there's an oil crisis, the oil's running out, which it is, just like our life is running out at every second. So the more they pump out oil, the less is left, obviously. So there was an oil crisis, and there was the price of oil, which means the price of everything all over the world, jumped up overnight. So devotees brought this to Srila Prabhupada's attention, and Srila Prabhupada, he gave the solution to the oil crisis. What should we do? Alternative sources of power. Yes, Prabhupada said, alternative source of power is the God gave you two legs, and you can walk. And if you need to carry heavy objects, then bullock cart. But then how do you go from one place to, like New York to Chicago? You don't go. You don't need to. Just produce everything locally, that's all. It's amazing. Other people have not thought about this. They think, we want to keep the society green, but we want to have our internet and TV and sports stadiums and big cities. It's all anartha, unnecessary. Live simply, chant Hare Krishna. That's backward, people think. But Srila Prabhupada would point out that the greatest literature in the world was produced by Vyasadeva living in a cave. That's real civilization. So it's possible here also. This the very fact that we're sitting in the present location that we are is based on some idea like that. How many years ago? About 15 years ago? Lokesh? 1980? 18 years ago. One devotee, Lokesh Prabhu, came here with the idea was that many devotees could come here, householders, and live and produce their food and this and that. For various reasons, it got to a certain point and didn't develop anymore. One of the reasons, I believe, is because of the climate. That it's from every point of view, it's probably the worst climate in Croatia for farming and for living in general. It's generally long cold winter. So the fact that it hasn't really got off the ground doesn't really help those who are householders and who are in the same situation. They have children. How are we going to bring them up in Krishna consciousness? How are we going to raise them? I mean, there's our own need as aspiring devotees, and the need of our children also. They go to the Kami schools and they imbibe all kind of bad things by bad association. So how can we raise them in Krishna consciousness. I was asked to speak on this. Of course, I've spoken on this topic many times. I was particularly asked to speak on this topic during this festival by Divya Prabandha Prabhu, who has seen the beginnings. Woo. Beginnings of such projects in India, and who's been closely connected with many of the household devotees in this region, and who himself grew up on a farm and has been talking to some of the devotees about coming together and making such a project. So he asked me to, for the devotees in this region. So he asked me to speak about this. So I've done so. And it's up to you to take it to the next stage. Devotees are here from Czech also, so you may think about that at some point. It becomes more and more difficult as the tentacles of the European Union come down into every single life. The European Union, one of its main purposes is to destroy the small farmers. I saw in Lithuania, when they joined the European Union, overnight the small farmers, which was like the major part of the economy, they were just all finished because they had all these rules that to be a farmer you have to have a barn and it has to be at least minimal this size and it has to be this condition, that condition, and then you have so many rules which they couldn't follow, nor is it practical for them to follow. You don't need a huge barn on a small farm. So they just, then half of Lithuania went to England and Ireland and they were working in factories and this and that. The Irish economy boomed after joining the European Union. And then, it collapsed again, as always happens when there's a quick boom. So this European Union, in many ways, it's demoniac. It's for the purpose of the big corporations, and for the insane policies, farming policies. All the vegetables are grown in one area, and you could still, as I was driving here in Croatia, you see people selling mid honey and cheese on the side of the street, but you won't be able to do that very long. They'll arrest you. Criminal. You produce honey at home and sell it. You criminal. You have to be punished. Absolutely demoniac. So it's better to start now, before these demons get their tentacles in more and more and more. So, like I said, there's some thoughts about that. And as I said, Divya Prabandha Prabhu asked me to speak about that. How to do, Lord, in any situation, how to do it, you have to think. Don't just buy some land and sit on it. You have to do a lot of planning. But even then, there are so many unknown variables. So you have to depend on Krishna and learn as you go along. But as far as possible, you can learn from others. And of course, learning is unlimited, so at some point you have to stop looking through all different journals and discussing with different devotees and actually go and do something. But another thing that our devotees found is that when they went to the land is that actually Mother Earth does give. And it's not that difficult to grow food. And Mother Earth gives profusely. It's amazing how much you can grow in a small piece. Small piece of land, you can easily produce plenty of vegetables, plenty enough for a whole family. And all kinds of varieties, and so fresh and nice, without chemicals, healthy. So many things to be learned. Okay, any question about this? Did you bring my diary? Yeah, there's a question. Yeah. I saw a hand there first, so let me. Oh, you got the mic? Okay. All right. Ask away.
Zanima me što misliš o farmama koje imaju struju ili u kojima bi se bakte odlučili na rad s traktorima ili ako bi se neke bakte odlučili da rade u obližnjem gradu kao nekoj prelaznoj pragmatičnoj soluciji dok ne dođemo do ideala.
What do you think about a kind of farm where the devotees would use electricity and work with the tractors and machinery and work in the some of them or work in the nearby cities, you know, in that beginning phases?
Devotees in the beginning phase work in nearby cities. They have electricity and tractors and all this kind of thing. As a first phase, well, it's not impossible, but often what happens is the first phase, you never get into second gear. And sometimes you move into reverse also. That happened with many of our farms. Many of the properties that we have, farms of ISKCON throughout the world, they're places in which devotees live and they work in the city. So the economy is not, and there are one or two devotees who are doing a little farming. But the whole idea of an agrarian community, it's a rural community, but it's not an agrarian community. So devotees, they may do that, but if you're going to do that, then there have to be clear guidelines that, okay, if you can come here and work in the city and get used to it and see if you can adjust to living here, but you have 1 year or whatever to make a decision. Either you stay and stop working in the city, or you don't go. You don't stay here. So, in the beginning, it may be necessary, just like if land has not been cultivated for many years, it may be necessary to plow it. Or necessary, or you would say, how necessary? Because previously there were no tractors, so it's not absolutely necessary. Absolutely is redundant with necessity. Actually, it's not necessary, but it is found to be practical to do that. A lot of land around here hasn't been farmed for many years, so if it was to be farmed, it may be first of all plowed using tractors, maybe leveled, and this and that. But on a regular basis, on a long term, it's not a good idea. Because then you get that one rural community we started up in the hills of Tamil Nadu, and there's a village with a small bazaar a few kilometers away. And then there's a small town even more kilometers away. So we were discussing, I was discussing with one of the devotees, And he said, you see, even we made this tube well. There's no running water as such, but a tube well is you pump it. Tube well means you sink the well, and the normal system is that you have a bucket and you pull up the water. And another system in some parts of India is you have a step-in well. That means that instead of sinking the well until the water comes and then pull up the water, you make steps which go down to the water level so that people can walk down and then carry the water up. So those are two systems. But another more modern system is to have a pump. So you pump by hand. Pump, 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 and the water comes out. So they made a few hand pumps like that. But he was saying even this concession, it's a machine. He said it's such a headache because if even one little washer goes out on that hand pump, then you can't use it. And then you have to call someone from some long distance who doesn't come, and then and he charges, eventually comes, has a look at it, and then goes away, and then comes back again after a few more days and brings the wrong washer. And it's just such a headache. Charges a huge amount of money because he's the only one in miles who does such a thing. So simple living has its advantages. There's a question over here.
U Bhagavad Giti Krishna kaže da je on stvorio van ashramu dharmu. Ono što je gospodin stvorio, svi vjerujemo da ne može biti trajno uništeno. Može biti privremeno usporeno ili privremeno zaboravljeno, ali trajno ne može biti uništeno. To je svima nama jasno. Ja sam rođen na selu i imao sam divno djetinjstvo. I to je najsretniji period mog života.
No, I'm asking you.
When will you need to translate for the other devotees?
No, I'm saying something completely not connected with the class. While the Croatian talk is going on, or whatever language it is.
Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita kaže da je Krishna.
That's arranged.
Bhagavad Gita says that Lord Krishna created Varnashrama Dharma, so whatever he created can be destroyed only temporarily, not permanently. I was born in the countryside, I was a village boy, grew up in a village, and it was the most beautiful part of my life.
This all gets recorded.
Taj period mog života je bio najsretniji period u mom životu. Kad sam otišao u grad, u urbanoj sredini, u industrializaciji itd., ta sreća je prepolovljena. Ja smatram da čovečanstvo mora konačno shvatiti da industrializacija ga vodi u samo uništenje.
So that was the happiest part of my life, and when I moved to the city, that happiness was cut in half. So I believe that modern society leads people into destruction.
I da se mora čovečanstvo vratiti na prvobitni, vratiti prirodi, majci prirodi, i živjeti u skladu sa prirodom.
And mankind has to return to Mother Nature and live in accordance to her rules.
U protivnom bit ćemo svi uništeni.
Otherwise we'll all be destroyed. May I just mention one thing about Toshan Krishna Prabhu? From a country boy, from a village boy, he...
This is Toshan Krishna?
Toshan Krishna Prabhu, yeah. From a country boy, he went to be the in charge of the complete air traffic of the former Yugoslavia in the headquarters of the Yugoslav army in Belgrade. So, from a country boy to the top of the chain.
So,
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, thank you very much for this wonderful lecture.
Yeah, that's the standard that everyone has to say, thank you very much for this wonderful lecture.
Very inspiring.
Don't say it. it's like a rule after every lecture. So thank you very much for the wonderful lecture. Okay, all right.
Guru Maharaj, I heard that if somebody wants to do agriculture...
You heard... Who did you hear from? Whatever you're going to say.
Local people where I live in. In India also, that if somebody wants to buy a land and do agriculture, then he has to be qualified, and then only you can buy the land.
What do you mean by qualified?
Means you have to pass some exams to be a farmer, and then only you can do the farming.
One young man, devotee, a few years ago came to Salem in Tamil Nadu, where we... have one sent, I was staying there. So I asked him what he was doing. He said he's studying in the university. I was asking what's his background, where does he come from? He said, my parents are farmers, and we live on our own land, and it's our ancestral property. So I asked him, then, why are you going to university? Why don't you just work on your parents' land, as your father and grandfather and great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather did? He said, well, now we join the European Union, you're not allowed to be a farmer unless you have a degree. You have to learn how to do all this modern demoniac sprays and all this kind of thing. So you have to be qualified. Well, I don't think anywhere in India you have to have a degree to be a farmer yet. But there in some states you can't buy land unless you are a farmer. That makes it more difficult in some states. In some places, actually everywhere the land is expensive, but in some places, very expensive. This is land we purchased in Tamil Nadu, I think at that time, for about 4 lakhs an acre. Whereas in Gujarat now we're getting at 12 lakhs an acre, something like that. Everything in Gujarat is going to be more expensive than in Tamil Nadu. Even that's a remote part of Gujarat. But you don't need it might be in some state, but I doubt it. I don't think they got to that stage in India where you have to have a qualification to be a farmer.
And the second question is, Guru Maharaj, you mentioned that Mother Earth gives whatever we...
Not in Dubai. Were you born in Dubai?
No, Guru Maharaj.
Born in?
In India.
In India. But your parents were already settled in Dubai?
No.
Your parents migrated to Dubai.
No. We, as a child, at the age of 18 years, we migrated.
Oh, you yourself. You and your brothers went and started business in Dubai. I see. So yeah, in Dubai, in the desert, Mother Earth withholds. But Srila Prabhupada also said that even the desert areas, if they're well managed, they can be converted to lands of milk and honey, as Israel. When when Jews settled in Palestine, the same area which was barren for centuries, they brought it to life by irrigation, and so that's possible also. That even Prabhupada said, even the desert can be brought to life.
So the Guru Maharaj, the idea is that are you suggesting that whatever situation maybe one is in now and can immediately move, or you can have...
Well, in whatever situation you're in, can you immediately move? I think it's pretty obvious that not everyone can immediately move. Talking like this is sowing seeds. I gave a lecture on the same topic on Friday at the Sindhi Ceremonial Hall. Friday, that's like the main gathering of our devotees in Dubai. On Friday, because it's the Muslim holiday, Friday. And how many devotees? Thousands, 1,200 devotees, something present. And it really struck a chord with one of them, at least, who was Nanda Kumar, whose he thought, wow, that's a really good idea. He's a city boy, born in the city, Madras, and then moved out to Dubai and working in banking and finance and all this thing. No contact with any such thing. But it struck, it hit him. Yeah, this is what we should be doing. And from that, then he started talking with others. And some were interested, and they've been cultivating this desire, and they're going step by step, and they're very much involved with this project in Karumandurai, or near Karumandurai in Tamil Nadu. So he has organized funding from Dubai for that, and he plans to move next year himself with his family. Husband and wife, they're both convinced this is what we should do. His wife is also a city girl from Coimbatore. Then she married him and moved to Dubai. But they're both prepared to do that.
As you said that, Mother Earth...
So we all move? No, don't move immediately. At least you have to start to think about it, understand it, and do it. Then step by step, do it. But you shouldn't wait too long if you're going to do it, because procrastination is the thief of time. Procrastination means putting things off. Dirgha Sutri in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the person in the mode of ignorance, one of his symptoms that he's Dirgha Sutri, means he takes a long time to do everything. He procrastinates. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Every day he says, I'll do it tomorrow. So one has to become mentally prepared to do that. And one has to be convinced. And husband and wife both have to be convinced. Otherwise it doesn't work. There are many realizations devotees have had. One of them, for women, it's more difficult because they have all the modern conveniences, like the washing machines and electrical appliances in the kitchen. Which they don't get in the village. Of course, in typical Indian village culture, the washing clothes is done by one caste. It's not that everyone washes all their clothes. Although all the Brahmins, they would bathe and wash their cloth at the same time. Just hang it up. What you can do is you can wash your dhoti, then take baths, and then by the time you're finished, it's dry. In the summer. You hang it up to dry, then you take baths in the river, do your whole Sandhya Vandanam, take some time, standing in the river, chant Gayatri Mantra, and you come out, and then the same dhoti is already dry. You see that still in India. People go to bathe at the river, and then there'll be two women holding one sari. And then within a few minutes it's dry, and then they put it on, and like that. Still see that, right? So there are the hot climate has its advantages also. You don't need to make arrangements for heating. But even in Nepal, where it's very cold, you see in the winter, people, they just go barefoot. They're born like that. They don't find it so difficult. People's bodies are very... All these modern conveniences have made people's bodies and minds very weak. So if there's any little in India also, I see if the temperature goes above 25 Celsius, immediately turn on the fan or the AC. They can't tolerate it. Now you see so many people, they can't sit cross-legged, just like in the West, because they have no practice to do so. People have tiny little apartments, but they have a table to eat at. It takes up so much space. The Japanese are more intelligent like that. They all live in little apartments. They sleep on the floor. They eat on the floor. It's still normal in Japan. Yeah, question here. Yeah. You better say it quick, because it has to be said in English and then Croatian.
So we speak about simple living in countryside.
By the way, Varnashram, we're talking about Varnashram. Establishing farm communities is just the beginning. Varnashram is another whole big project, dividing society into four varnas and four ashrams. But a beginning is living in the country and then educating the children.
So the question
in Krishna
is,
consciousness and in practical matters also, how to make. In one of the projects, they're teaching children weaving, and then they're teaching them all, giving them a start in all kinds of things. They're learning how to grow food, look after the cows. They're giving them exposure to all kinds of things.
He's asking if you are supposed to live according to this principle. Of simple living, even while living in cities.
According to the principles, should we live in cities? Well, as far as possible, but it's not fully possible, is it, in the city? For instance, if you want to go and pass stool outside, that won't be much appreciated in the city. <laughs> 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're sitting under a tree pooping. That often used to happen actually on traveling Sankirtan. We'd be out somewhere and taking a bath, and 3 o'clock in the morning, the police car comes. And, what are you doing? And, well, we're taking a bath. It's like they just can't work it out at all. Why should anyone be throwing a bucket of water over their head at 3 o'clock in the morning, outside? It's almost impossible to explain to them. Whereas you're not doing anything illegal, they just go off and then you're reporting another UFO. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna!
All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.